Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great podcast, Bald Men on Campus, an ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaPhonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN basketball personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Chinwe Agumike, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap, and also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is that time of week where we have a guest join us and coming to us live from sunny California. The man who peaked when he was 10 years old, but won an award yesterday. Joel Anderson of Slate, what's going on?
Hey, man, I would argue that I peaked probably around 27, you know what I'm saying? But that's what's up. I appreciate you, you know, giving me props.
Was it Christmas or your birthday? What did your wife get you?
Wait, which year? You talking about the picture?
Yes, I'm talking about the picture.
Yeah, it got a big life-size picture of me when I was 11 years old in my starting blocks position. You know what I'm saying? But that's a piece of history right there. I can't walk away from that.
Yeah, piece of history. At 10 years old. I have not heard you talk about anything historic from when you was 27. As you say, that is when you peaked.
I got an award corner right here on top of my desk. You know, I don't want to mess with Gabe and Adi's, you know, connection or whatever, but I could just tilt it this way. You could see all this little collection of awards that are right over here.
Only one award that you tell anybody about, and it's you winning that damn race when you was 10 years old, which is how I know that you peaked when you was 10 years old.
I say it to make other people comfortable. You know what I'm saying? I don't need to let everybody know how good I am. I know I'm that dude. You know what I'm saying?
How does telling us about your exploits as a 10-year-old track star make us more comfortable?
I just, you know, I don't want, you know, I don't want to flex on people, you know what I'm saying? You know,
that's exactly what you're doing.
When I was 10, you know, but I don't want to talk about, you know, the other things that have happened in the course of my life, you know? I mean, things went on. I didn't even talk about how I won the spelling bee that same year, you know what I'm saying? That I was the fastest 10-year-old in the country. I won the school spelling bee, finished 3rd in district. I don't talk about that because I just want everybody to feel comfortable around me.
3rd in district, huh?
Houston Independent School District. That's one of the largest school districts in the country.
Large. It is large. You are correct.
What are you trying to say about public school? What are you trying to say about the public schools?
No, I'm not saying anything about public schools. I'm saying that, yes, HISD was large and you did not graduate from them for reasons that, you know.
Look, I mean, I cannot control where my mother.
By the way, not saying Joel was a high school dropout. I'm saying that he transferred and went to private school.
My mother had me transfer and go to private school.
She was worried about your future. She went to that spelling bee and was like, okay, it shouldn't have been this easy.
Well, no.
Any school my boy could win the spelling bee at is not going to prepare him for the future.
Have you seen Finding Forrester? You know, they were just trying to pluck me out like a rose that grew out of concrete. They really wanted to see if I could flourish in another sort of environment.
Tell the people about the award you won last night, please.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of embarrassing. I hate to go on about it. But, yeah, you know, last night, Slow Burn 6, the season on LA Riots 92, we won Best History Podcast at the AMBY Awards, which is, Gabe called it the Oscars of podcasting, which is very nice of him to say it that. But I am really gratified, man. Our team put a lot of work into that. That was, for me, the work of my life. You know, I put everything into that, and it's nice to see it recognized. We didn't do it for awards, but that we got the award is really gratifying, really humbling. See, I'm trying to be humble right now. So,
congratulations, because it was an incredible piece of work. It really was. I got to say, chances are Josh Levine got robbed. He did Slow Burn 5 on Donald Trump. If he's a little bit salty, I might understand.
Hey, that was another year. That was another year. That was another year. So,
okay. You know, okay.
And Josh is part of the Slow Burn team, so he can take some pride in that win too. This is not just for me; it's for all of us. Everybody that was on the show.
You basically hit Josh Levine with touch that thing, folks. You just like, yeah, he get to touch the trophy too. He get to feel it a little bit.
I legitimately texted him. I was like, yo, you know you are part of this, right? Don't tell me congratulations. You were right there reading these scripts with me. So yeah, man, you know, he can share the glory with me. Now maybe I might have, you know, I might be the one that actually did the celebrating last night, but he can feel like he was a part of the team for real.
No,
you know?
Man, that's what's up. Well,
I appreciate you because look, thank you, bro. You the one that's, you know, H. Bomani, you know what I'm saying? So I'm thank you for doing that, because you're the celebrity here. You're the one doing the great work, you know, that's resonating with the people across the country, you know?
I mean, so. I do think all that slow burn promo we be doing here, you know, having your ass on to talk about it and stuff like that, I think that probably tips you over the top. You know what I'm saying?
See, you're gonna say, but I always tell her, I say, like, I have no, there's no reason for me to be on Bomani's show other than like we vibe, that's my boy, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm not famous, you know, I'm no Mina Kimes, you know what I'm saying? I'm no Monica McNutt, no L, you know what I'm saying? I'm just a dude who used to work at ESPN. I'm on ESPN more now than when I was
Hey man, what can I say? The streets love you, dog. The streets rock with you a lot more than I do.
I love the streets.
You know what I mean?
Hey, look, man, I love the streets. So, you know, if this is what the people want, well, who am I to deny them?
I'm just saying, though, nobody love the streets more than a graduate of Straight Jesuit High School.
Isn't
that over there by Rice?
That's not where I'm from. No, it's in Chinatown on the west side near A-Leaf. Okay.
Yo, you got to realize, man. Yeah, that's
right
south
down
side.
The street from Sharptown.
Okay, that's south side Houston. That's a whole nother city. Like, that's like uptown Brooklyn sort of situation that people just don't understand. North side and south side are two different places entirely.
Again, there's no reason. If you live on the south side of Houston, there's never a reason for you to go on the north side.
Which, by the way, is not the true in the inverse. If you are on the north side, there are reasons for you to go to the south side. Oh, my problem with y'all is not so much y'all don't know nothing about the north side as much as y'all try to act like the north side is basically like being in Waco. And that's where my issue comes up.
I mean, it kind of is. When I was growing up and you would go to the north side, there wasn't even really lights off of Jones Road. Not out where you were. I remember going out there to visit my homeboy who went to Sauk Creek. I just feel like there weren't a lot of like freeway lights or anything like that. You get off the exit there, it was just very dark. I just remember feeling very dark out there, like y'all were underdeveloped. I was like, oh, this is how y'all live on the north side?
Because if only it could be as developed as the south side of Houston. What y'all do the second y'all get enough money to get out of the squalor that you live in? Try to pack your stuff and go to the north side.
Most city packed this man up, man. Don't let him talk about
outside
of town.
I'm just saying, when
like
y'all
that.
Come up, it's all of a sudden, you're like, yo, I heard about the Woodlands. Which, by the way, to me, isn't even the north side. That, to me, is like the south side of Dallas. But as soon as y'all get y'all a little bit of bread, all of a sudden y'all want to come over and holler about the north side, live a little better for yourselves.
I don't know what them people do now down there. You know, that's on them. But if they want to move, actually, to me, it's kind of funny, the heights of the north side to me. I don't know how that works, but a lot of people in Houston now started gentrifying and moving into the heights area. And it's like the hot area in Houston. And when I was growing up, none of them people would have been over there walking their dog in the 90s.
Well, it was
like
just
that.
Mexican in the 90s, right?
Yeah, man. I think like Reagan High School was what it was over there and stuff like that. Again, it was just the city is so big, there'd never be a reason for you to know anybody from Reagan High School. Like, why would you go over there? There was nothing over there, right? It went very resourced. Now they got a HEB and, you know, bars and nice, you know, nice hot spots. I was just down there a couple months ago, and I was like, okay, all right, let's see what y'all trying to do over here.
People like, dog, get me out of the south side. I understand. I understand.
Stop it.
Anyway, man, did you read that Urban Meyer story in The Athletic?
I did, bro, and he can't. So you mentioned this a couple years ago. It makes a lot of sense why Texas could not hire him now, right? And don't you get the feeling that this was a lot of the stuff that was going on in the background all along that we just did not know about, that he was a mess? And people were like, oh, I can't do that. But Jacksonville could do it, because the theory is that, oh, what he does, maybe that'll work a little bit better at the pro level. You know, maybe he's, you know, moved on beyond the college level or whatever, and he could try this at the pro level, because colleges can't really have him be the face of their program anymore. But, I mean, none of it is a surprise if you've heard the scuttlebutt around that guy for years, but it's just sort of shocking to see that he would talk to people and treat people like that in those positions. I mean, like, you'd think that he'd have a little bit of self-awareness that, I'm new to this. I don't know the NFL game. Maybe I should just, you know, kind of chill and kind of ease my way into it, but that's clearly not how he rolls.
But I don't understand how these dudes keep getting players in college.
Right.
That's where my level of confusion comes up is, if you know this guy is kicking it like this, I don't understand how people keep sending their kids to go down there.
The NFL, right? That's it. But, if he's the guy that you know that can get you to the NFL.
But you can go to the NFL anywhere. Like the idea that, right, but I'm still saying, all they got to do is watch the draft one time. And it's abundantly clear. Like the idea right. that, yo, you got to go here because Urban Meyer's going to get you to the NFL. The list of guys that will get you to the NFL is so long. Like, let me tell you somebody who would get you to the NFL. Dave Wanstead. That's a dude that would get you to the NFL. And most of these cats, we talking about 4 or 5-star dudes. You know who going to get them to the NFL? Themselves.
Yeah.
That's who's going to get them there. Like a dude like Wanstead, though, is a dude that takes like a 3-star LeSean McCoy. It turns him to, you know, that type of player. Butch Davis, when he was in coaching in college and in Carolina, that's a guy that could get you to the NFL. Urban Meyer is not a dude who takes 3 stars and turns them into first round picks. He's a dude who takes 5 stars and turns them into national champions. And that's not the same thing.
But Mike, I mean, thinking about it, this is the reason why dudes pile up at Alabama and why they piled up in Miami before them. Because it's not just that that guy seems to have a knack for at least – maybe he can't turn guys into NFL players, but he can at least guide your development. So you're not taking a chance if you go play for Urban Meyer. You're not running the risk.
But what I'm saying is the list of people who are capable of doing that is extensive. There's not one guy, like Urban Meyer is not the one guy who can get you to the NFL.
Sure,
He's not the he's not the 2 guy. He's not the 3 guy. Like, who is the coach that can't get you to the NFL?
I don't know. That's
there
good,
isn't
that's
one.
I mean, it's true. But the thing is, you want the development. You want the practice. And those guys, they want to go to practice. They want to practice against other pros.
But again, why are you saying that like the only place where you can do that is with Urban Meyer? Like that doesn't, what you're saying, the thought process is he's the guy that can get us to the NFL. What I'm saying is that's stupid. Like, so you're saying like, okay, well, you know, we can go practice against other pros. I can do that at Auburn. I can go do that at Tennessee. You can go do that anywhere.
The best Auburn team of our lifetime had 2 pros on it, bro. You know what I mean?
That doesn't mean that the rest of them don't have pros.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying because we can understand that, yes, any coach, any program can technically get you to the NFL. But
not technically. What gets you to the NFL is not development. And this is where people get this wrong. What gets you to the NFL is talent.
Right.
Talent. There. Is what gets you to the NFL.
But you don't want to play with that. But you don't want to play. You want to put it in the hands of a guy that has a proven record of putting multiple guys into the NFL.
You're not
draft.
Hearing what I'm saying. He didn't put them into the NFL. They put themselves into the NFL.
But you know what the system, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm saying this is what a 17 or 18-year-old and their family, when they're looking at all that.
I understand that that's what they're saying. You don't have to tell me what they're saying. What I'm saying is that doesn't actually make any sense in application.
That's true. You could get to the NFL from the University of Houston. You can get to there from Oklahoma State. All of that. But again, there's a good number of 4 and 5 stars at practice. You can learn from them. I'm sure Sean Springs, Antoine Winfield come back to practice.
And is that worth getting talked crazy to by Urban Meyer? Like what you're telling me is not, we know that, right? But right, I'm raising the question, why is it that you're willing to go up there and get talked to crazy by Urban Meyer when you could accomplish the same thing without somebody talking crazy to you all the time? And beyond that, the word on Urban, and they said this in the story in The Athletic, and I had heard this too. If you think he talks to his players badly,
oh man,
that's the way he talks to his coaches.
And that was shocking.
And I say again, why are you putting up with this? Like, I look at a man like Charlie Strong. He worked with Urban for years.
Right.
Why are you putting up with this? And Charlie Strong, who his time at Texas notwithstanding, the thing I don't think people understand about him is he's a legitimate pioneer in terms of coaching defense in college. He is at the forefront of moving to like a 4-2-5 hybrid type of system, which, by the way, 20 years ahead of his time, because it's what you got to be able to do right now with all these spread offenses.
Garrett Patterson, give him a little props for that, too.
No, I mean, they're up there, too, but you ain't got to let this man talk crazy to you.
Oh, absolutely. The coaches thing I understand a little less well. They said he talked crazy to coaches. They didn't say he talked crazy to Charlie Strong. I've seen, we all have seen Charlie Strong. I cannot imagine Urban talking to him in
when
that sort of way.
When he sat in the room and told all of them they were all losers. What had they ever won? Charlie Strong won two national championships with you.
Right. That is somebody that's out of control. And actually, it's kind of interesting because I saw in the wake of that story in The Athletic this past week that they said, oh, well, Urban Meyer wasn't going to work at the pro level because the amount of control he had in college, and maybe he couldn't, you know, he wouldn't be able to adjust at that level. And I'm wondering, shouldn't you ask if maybe that's a problem in and of itself? That why should anybody have that amount of unchecked power over anyone, let alone men who are allegedly there as part of some grand institutional commitment to maturity and development and growth? Like, it doesn't seem right that, okay, that's not good for NFL players, but it's okay for college kids to be talked to that way.
So I don't think talked to that way is appropriate for college kids, right? But I do think that there's an acknowledgement that you can talk to them differently than you can talk to full-on adults. The hierarchy is different because there's a hierarchy that comes with that level of youth and people who are above them and what the roles are supposed to be, and that there is a measure of submission that comes when you're younger to the idea of authority. And it's not about submission when you are grown up. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a different situation.
But, Monty, what do they always say about kids? Kids want to be coached, right? And I think that's true. Like, when I went to college, when everybody goes to college, you want to be coached. So that makes a lot of sense. But I think, and I mean, you don't need me to tell you this, but obviously there's a line between that and the things that he was saying to people. Like, here's a quote from that story. And do you know what would happen if I cut you guys? You couldn't get a job paying more than $15 an hour.
So see, that's what got me, is the fundamental disrespect that you have for the, like, you think these boys ain't shit. Like, that's right. What it all is. You think that you the one that's, which by the way, ask me, which makes me say, who is it exactly that you are recruiting? Because, like, I've gotten my knock on Mike Krzyzewski and, like, different things about the way he recruited over time. But let me tell you what he ain't recruiting ever. A dude that he thinks would only get a $15 an hour job if he wasn't playing for Mike Krzyzewski. You know what I mean? You don't have to recruit guys that are otherwise useless. Like, if you really think that about them, then who are you recruiting? So in the end, I would, like, fundamentally hope that he doesn't really think that. When you talk about, like, you shouldn't be talking to anybody on that level, all that, totally get it. I have a bit of a hot, I don't even know it's a hot take, but something I want to throw out here.
Okay, let's do it.
You hear the argument very often that college coaches can't work in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And I get why people say that. I think they're missing the point. It's not that college coaches can't coach in the league. Because the truth is, most of these guys that ultimately get it cracking in the league started in college. Like, that still remains the case, that you start as a college assistant coach and then you move up to the NFL and then you go there, right? No, the guys who can't survive in the pros are guys who were very successful college coaches. Those are the ones that can't get it done. And the reason is, once you are a very successful college coach, then that's when you get that unchecked power. Then that's when people let you do whatever in the world it is that you want. And they don't just hire you. Like, you're not like Doug Marrone, right? Where you get hired to come back to the league and you're just a dude. Ain't nobody really heard it. You ain't got no reason to think that you're going to walk in, you know, kicking people like Urban Meyer was. But if you Urban Meyer, then you think that you can come in and you can behave that way and run wild on folks because you've been the king and you now believe you've written books about your leadership style, like all of these things. You now believe that the way you do things works and you've been doing these things in this place. But if you take a cat, like if you were to go hire, say, Mike Riley, and I'm not saying Mike Riley was a great NFL coach.
He was a dude, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't recall hearing those stories about Mike Riley trying to kick people.
Right.
Take Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll, who was a very successful college coach and who started as a college coach, right? Like, he was a college defensive assistant, and then he went to the league and had a couple years as an assistant to look around and be like, oh, okay, this is how it goes. And so then he became an NFL coach where he was players coach guy. Went to college, made it work, but brought the players coach pro model down and then brought it back. And he ain't no softy. Nope. But he understood, like, what it was that works. These cats who are in college and they have all this power and they get drunk off of it and then try to be pro coaches, Those are the ones who can't get it right. Because even Saban, and people had their issues with Saban, and there's the terrible story from the one book about some guy like having a seizure or something and Saban walking out. Those dudes in Miami, their problem with Saban was that he left.
Right.
The problem wasn't really about when he was there. They weren't like, good riddance, this man said he's out of here. They're like, he said he was in it with us and he's not. But Saban right. had an understanding because Saban had spent that time in the NFL before and right. was like, yo, I don't. You can't, yeah, not just Belichick. Don't forget this. Something I really want somebody to write a book about. How in the world did Nick Saban ever work as the defensive backs coach for the House of Pain Houston Oilers?
Yeah, I
know. He was working under Jerry Glanville, who is the complete opposite of everything I think
wild
of
boy.
With Nick Saban.
Wild boy, Jerry
Squad
Glanville.
Full of yeah, wild, wild, wild boys. Penalties all over the place. Their motto was echo with a whistle.
I mean, in the teams in the AFC Central, I mean, I don't know if young kids know what the AFC Central was, but that was when the Oilers, the Bengals, the Browns, and the Steelers, that was the old division for years. And all those coaches hated Jerry Glanville because those
yes.
teams were so dirty and they always were trying to start in or around the whistle. So, yes.
You remember that time Chuck Knoll lectured him at midfield yes. after one of those
yes.
games? Chuck Knoll, four-time Super Bowl winner, but in the 80s, you know, the Steelers were kind of just what they were. But Chuck Knoll had enough of the way that Jerry Glanville was getting down. Sam Weich hated,
oh,
hated 61 Jerry to 7. Glanville.
61-7. I'll never forget what the Bengals did to the Oilers over that. And that was a lot of that was on the strength of Sam Weich hating Jerry Glanville and the Oilers.
Was the 61-7 the regular season game or the playoff game?
I believe it was the regular season, and then they went to the playoffs.
So it was a regular season game, and then, as I recall, the Oilers beat them the next time they played, like, 41-14
yeah.
or something crazy like that. Mm. And then they beat the brakes off them in the playoffs.
Yeah, man. Again, those Oilers teams were great. It would be really interesting to wonder, because I kind of got the idea that Jerry Glanville was sort of a clown, but I wonder if anybody else could have won with that team like that. And because the thing is, the Oilers did not have an identity. For people that don't know a lot about the Houston Oilers, like, up until that point, you know, they had the Bum Phillips, Earl Campbell years, but after that, it was just, you know, it was kind of middling. And then Jerry Glanville just infused a lot of energy and, like, character. Like, he really made the Houston Oilers a thing, like a national team in a way that they had not been before. And so I just kind of wonder, you know, could anybody else have done that? And I think that the funny thing about this is that the infamous fight between Kevin Gilbride and Buddy Ryan on the sideline, the only miracle is that that did not happen on Jerry Glanville's staff and that happened on Jack Pardee's staff. Because
yes.
that seems like the sort of thing that would happen with Jerry Glanville and not Jack Pardee.
Yeah, by the way, I was wrong. It went 61-7, and then the Oilers lost to the Browns in the last game of the season, and then they lost the overtime playoff game, and then that was the end of the Jerry Glanville
Who did they lose to in the playoffs
era.
That year?
Pittsburgh.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but that was the end. He closed out with three straight losses to division teams, and that was the end of the Jerry Glanville era right there.
The Jerry Glanville thing, too. What was it, the leaving tickets for Elvis in
yes.
every game or something like that?
I was yes.
just, it's a real anachronism of a different kind of time because that just all of that just sounds very old.
Dressing like Johnny Cash.
Wearing all black, all that. He was a perfect fit for your Falcons. You know, so I always kind of felt like when he went over there, I was like, okay, I can kind of see how that personality might fit that city a little bit.
Well, don't forget, he had been there first.
I didn't.
He was the defensive coordinator for them in the 70s. Like, Glanville is a bit of a 3-4 pioneer. Like, that's part of why he fit with the Oilers is, like, the legacy of the Bum Phillips 3-4. Glanville was, like, in line with that also. And so he had been their coordinator in the 70s, and then they brought him. And he's like, oh, I got Dion. They would have traded for Andre Rison. Like, these are all my kinds of guys.
Oh, man. I mean, that team, I know Michael Vick is sort of when the Falcons thing flipped up, but I always kind of felt that Andre Rison, Deion Sanders, Falcons is like when the Falcons became, like, they had always been a joke of a franchise for a long time, but when they got those dudes, at least they had some personality, you know? Who was your quarterback? Was it like one of the
That was Chris Miller.
Chris Miller? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But then they turned joke right fast. They only had one good year with that run of dudes. Falcons never had back-to-back winning seasons until the 21st century.
Oh, my God.
And I think it's like during the Mike Smith era. I don't think they had back-to-back winning seasons in the Vic era.
Man. And you stuck with them about all that. It's like kind of like your support for Texas, bro.
Dude, you rooted for the Oilers.
So? What? I mean, of course, love your blue. What's embarrassing? They had the black quarterback when that wasn't even popping.
You weren't alive for love your blue, Joel.
I mean, I was on the edge of it, you know? I remember vaguely the last year of Earl Campbell in the NFL.
Oh, yeah. That was like 83. How successful was that? I was like 84, 85. Yeah, how great was that?
But I just kind of remember the detritus of that time. You know, as a kid, I don't have specific memories of it, but I have like a sense of, oh, this is my team and I'm really excited about them. I was, you know, 4 or 5 years old, you know, 4 or 5 years until I was the fastest 10-year-old in the country. But again, it was one of those things that I just have feelings about that time. And it like rooting for the Oilers, at least for me, there'll never be anything like that. I mean, again, you felt so proud having Warren Moon, that run and shoot offense. That's something that not a lot of other people were doing. They had a real identity in a way. I don't have any shame. It ain't like rooting for a team that has the Eyes of Texas as his fight song or anything like that, or the Falcons, you know, 28-3. Or, I mean, I guess
I wasn't
the Hawks were so sorry.
I wasn't rooting for the Falcons at 28-3. And sure. No coach ever told me to give up my football dreams and then got caught saying the N-word at practice and still got my respect like Gary Patterson does from you.
Hey, I want you people to know, I know that Bomani tried to disavow his support of the Longhorns at the last podcast. I saw that little cute disavow you had. Just keep in mind that this is the same brother that texted me a few weeks ago talking about, man, Chris Beard got them boys playing real good. Chris Beard, and here they go 22-12. That's the Tom Pender special right there. That's nothing special. Don't act like you weren't trying to hype up Chris Beard.
I hyped him up when he was at Texas Tech and said he was a really good coach. Okay. And I said that Texas hired a good coach. I can't understand why it is you got so little that you could try to hang over me that you keep trying to hold out this one thing and just won't let it go. Am I that bulletproof? You know what I'm saying? Well, that's really the only thing that you can get. And I'd be like, Joel, I don't root for Texas anymore.
I'm just saying,
you just keep bringing it back up.
You send shots at my school, and I'm just telling you that this don't concern you if you're not riding for the Texas Eyes, you know, the
I'm riding against you. It has absolutely nothing to do with anybody else. I'm riding against you.
You should go on and root for Clark Atlanta. I understand, you know what I'm saying? They went 12-16 this year in basketball, ended that season with a 6-point loss to Lemoyne.
Oh, no, I root for them in principle. I just ain't going to follow it up.
Did you know they lost to Morehouse in football this year? That must have been humiliating. That must have been sad.
That doesn't really surprise me. It must have been. What actually be extra sad is Gary Patterson always being out here. We don't need Texas. We better than Texas. Anything else. And now his groveling ass is over there just happy to have an assistant coaching job, just like everybody else. TCU, a school full of dudes that wish they had gotten an offer from Texas. Which one of y'all got an offer from Texas when you was there? None of you. That's who. That's why y'all be over there, the salty, all you salty 2.5 stars wishing. No, he ain't getting no offer from Texas. Because if he had, he wouldn't have gone to no goddamn TCU if he got an offer
Fort Worth,
from Texas.
Have you been to Fort Worth? Fort Worth's a lovely town, my brother. You know, and it's a nice campus.
Stop right there. Stop right there. This is all I have to say about Fort Worth. Every now and then, you got a city and something about it just fits perfectly with the whole get down of the place. And Fort Worth has that. They got an arena in Fort Worth, and it is called Dickies Arena because the arena is sponsored by Dickies because that's what Fort Worth is. And I'm surprised. And by the way, when the deal with Dickies expires, you know what they're going to call the Fort Worth Arena? Black Air Force One Center. That's what they're going to call that. It's going to be the Black Air Force One Center.
I mean, every city has its little spots, you know what I'm saying?
Some cities are spots, Joel. Some cities are spots. I need to go call my man Big Sid. Cindy Castillo writes for our show. He's from Fort Worth. He'll come in here and be like, yeah, everything Bomani is saying is correct.
I think you need to go check out Sundance Square. Go hit up, you know, some of the areas off of Hewlin Boulevard. You know, you might have a little antiquated notion of what Fort. Now, I'm not going to deny that in the mid to late 90s, Fort Worth was hot. You know, it was kind of popping. There were places. There was a 25-cent movie theater that they showed 25-cent movies on Tuesday, and I never forget they had the cops come in and talk to the football team. They're like, you want to make sure you do not show up at the movie theater on those nights. It was a big thing. Again, I don't know. They were cops. Who knows what the hell they would tell. You know, who knows? But I do remember distinctly. Cops in Fort Worth was like seemingly a long-term series. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was always on there. So I get it. But things have changed. You should go back again. It's very nice. It's a very nice town.
I'm good. As I recall, the last time I went to Fort Worth, my uncle stole from my brother to buy rocks on Christmas morning.
Oh, wow. Damn.
Yeah, it was a little dicey.
I wonder when he went buy rocks on somewhere off Barry, on East Barry or something.
he might have bought them from his son.
Oh, man.
Maybe. We don't know. Man. But it could have happened.
This sounds like something from a Kendrick song. You know? Like, I don't know.
No, it just sounds like Fort Worth. It sounds like Fort Worth, the place that you were advocating for. But anyway, we talk about something that's a bit more on neutral territory. You be waking up. I'm going to try to get Bomani about this thing about Texas again. It has never worked before, but I'm going to keep doing it. Anyways, something we can agree on, something we can all get together on here. How much does it stink to be Baker Mayfield right now?
Did you laugh that that report, there's mutual disinterest between him and the Panthers? I mean, that's...
No, I did not.
They said there's mutual disinterest. I was like, what? What? I mean, that is so insulting. And then apparently I saw something last night that said that the league consensus was that Baker wasn't necessarily enough over Sam Darnold for Carolina, that they didn't want him.
And okay. Now, if I'm Baker, like, I got to come burn the place
down. I might have to fight you over that. I was like, are you serious?
Because that's not even true.
I was like, how did this happen?
Yo, it would be different if that were true. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, he's so much better than Sam Darnold, though. Everybody's better than Sam Darnold.
Oh, wow.
Show me the lie. Like, Sam Darnold, I'm about to pull up Sam
Darnold. Sam
Darnold
better than Josh Rosen.
Yeah, I guess. Like, yeah, we got that. No, but I'm not as sold on that. If Josh Rosen had gotten 4 years to play, I'm not sure that he would be worse than Sam Darnold has been. Sam Darnold, in his last 24 games, has 18 touchdown passes and 24 interceptions in the NFL.
Yikes. That's 1972 stats. That's like Kenny Stabler or something, you know?
He averaged 6.2 yards per attempt.
Wow.
No, that's what I'm saying. There's no way that you're going to tell me that Baker Mayfield can't hold a candle to no Sam Darnold. That is preposterous, but the audacity of Baker Mayfield to have places he don't want to go.
Right. I feel like, oh, you don't want me? I don't want you neither. You know, I felt like it must be that, but ride with me on this. Something else must be going on behind the scenes, right? Like, is there something else going on with Baker, the people in front offices and everything else know about him that we don't know? Because it's one thing for them to say, okay, like, we want to try to upgrade at this position. It's another thing to say, we want to grown up at that position and then to bring in Deshaun Watson, right? You know? I mean, so I just feel like there must be something else going on behind the scenes that we don't know about.
Well, hold on. First of all, to be fair, Deshaun Watson may be a nasty grown-up, but he is a grown-up, right? Like, face of the franchise, all of that type stuff. He does have that under control. There's no question about that.
He presents well.
The thing I said about Baker coming in, and this was me viewing him through the lens of me being an old head, was that I feel bad for any of those people who are always out here trying to prove somebody wrong.
Ooh.
Because one of two things is going to happen. Either A, like, you prove them all wrong, and now you're just unhappy, miserably looking for somebody to prove wrong. Or B, what happens when they're right? And so for Mayfield did a lot of proving them wrong at just about every turn, right? He walked on at Texas Tech. He became the starter. Kingsbury decided to move on to Davis Webb. He goes to Oklahoma and becomes legitimately one of the greatest college football players of all time. Like, when you really go back and look at what Mayfield did at Oklahoma, it ain't just about the Heisman Trophy finish later. He might be the best quarterback that Oklahoma has ever had.
Do you remember that his last college game, the one in the Rose Bowl against Georgia?
He was incredible.
He was great. He was really, really great. And at that point, I was like, okay, maybe. It's not that I ever had a lot of doubt about him or anything like that.
Oh,
but
I did.
Was like, well, I thought that he could be an NFL quarterback. You could have never convinced me that he would be the number one pick in the draft. But to do that against a Mel Tucker defense.
Yeah. A loaded defense.
A loaded defense. Right. Yeah. That team won with defense because they had Jake Fromm at quarterback, right?
Yeah.
So obviously they're winning on defense. And for him to have played that well, I was like, okay, maybe this elevates him in a way that I had not previously considered.
Again, another prove wrong moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
But now he's not proving anybody wrong.
Right.
And he has to be looking at this and realizing, I'm not much better than this. Ooh. Not to say that he can't improve upon where he is right now, but he's not much better than this, right? What happens when you start proving them right? Mm. What do you do? How do you get past that? Because it would be one thing if the prove them wrong thing had come with struggle along the way, but I contend it didn't really come with struggle. It came with the hiccup of leaving Texas Tech, but it didn't come with a struggle to get there. It was, you guys are sleeping on me because I'm little. And at every turn, he made that happen. But now it's just a matter, you're not that good. So then how do you cope with it after you have not proven these people wrong?
But Monty, how bad is he really?
He's not bad.
Or how good is he really?
He's not good.
You'd rather have Baker than Mitch Trubisky, right?
Not sure.
Woo, that's damning on its face. Marcus Mariota?
I would lean toward having him over Mariota.
Kirk Cousins? Oof.
Well, I can't win with either of them.
Yeah. Jared Goff?
I take him over Jared Goff.
Jameis?
I take him over Jameis.
Daniel Jones?
I take him over Daniel Jones.
Tua?
Tua still got an incomplete.
Carson Wentz? Oof.
But I can't win with either one of them. Like, that's the dilemma there. Like, Carson Wentz is more physically talented, but you see how it comes apart for him, and he can only play for, like, one coach.
Right. Right. It's worked once. But that's kind of Baker, too, right? It's worked once. There was one year that he had that was pretty good, and now the rest of it, you know?
That's fair. But you get what I'm saying, though? It's just that if he weren't a number one overall pick, we're having a completely different discussion about him, and we're just kind of happy that he's around and that he's making some things happen. But I have never, and this is, I think, the issue with him, where I think it's different than, say, Carson Wentz. Even if not for an extended period of time, I have seen Carson Wentz look excellent. I've never seen Baker Mayfield look excellent in the NFL.
I didn't think he looked excellent, but I do remember when he came in as a rookie and seemed to inject a little bit of energy and potential in a way that...
But that might have happened anyway. Like, that's a correlation causation situation. Tyrod gets hurt. Like, they were like 1-1-1, and then they play this next game, and Tyrod gets hurt, and then they go to Mayfield, and he plays well. And you know how that always goes. And so I think that we ascribe this energy that happened when the truth was it was a team that had been terrible for 2 years that was on the upswing anyway with a fairly decent quarterback that could have continued that.
Right. If he wasn't a number one pick, we wouldn't say that he was a bust. Like, we're not at the point where we call him a bust. Yeah, right?
Right. I mean, but I'm not even calling him a bust. It doesn't help that there are two quarterbacks in that draft that were better than him.
Right.
But he wasn't.
There were only two good quarterbacks in that draft.
Right, but he wasn't the worst quarterback. In fact, he's number three.
Yeah, he's three.
He's better than Darnold.
He's not bad. Right.
He's better than Darnold. He was better than Rosen. And he played last year just like totally wrecked and destroyed.
He's
that chip on my shoulder stuff don't work at quarterback, man.
Right.
Or at least not in the way that he does it. Like, I think Tom Brady has chip on shoulder, but Tom Brady operates, I think Tom Brady's confidence is a different type of confidence, right? So the Tom Brady confidence to me, like the reflection of it is, Drew Henson gets recruited at Michigan. Mm-hmm. And Tom Brady, like, yo, you're going to lose your job. He's like, what makes you think that?
Right.
Baker Mayfield is, oh, so you brought somebody to take my job, huh? Okay. You know, that's not the same thing. Like, Tom Brady's on the, all right, y'all going to see.
Right.
I feel you. Just watch. Y'all going to see.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too, because I think about, you know, Baker is sort of a victim of the new era of NFL coverage. And walk with me with this. So I feel like when we were growing up, you could be Bubby Brister, a Neil O'Donnell, a Ken O'Brien, and still make it without this kind of unrelenting scrutiny, right? Because it wasn't 24-hour radio. Teams were still sort of regional. So you may have known your QB wasn't good, but it was harder to compare. But now, you know, the coverage of the NFL is national. You cover the whole league. You get to see everybody. Fans in front offices can see even more acutely now, oh, this guy doesn't stack up, right?
Right. And running backs were the superstars.
What?
Like,
dude.
Quarterbacks, I mean, not that quarterbacks weren't stars, but also quarterbacks just weren't throwing the ball nearly as much as they throw the ball now.
You could win with Mark Rippon, bro. You could have a great team, a great Super Bowl caliber team with Mark Rippon as your starting quarterback, or Stan Humphries.
You could win Super Bowls with Phil Simms and Jeff Hostetler.
Jeff Hostetler, yes.
You could win a Super Bowl with Joe Theismann.
Right.
Who was a good player, don't get me wrong, but, you know, not a great player.
But money, like, you could go with the diminished Doug Williams. I mean, the star of that Super Bowl, Timmy Smith, ran for over 200 yards in that game.
He was the number two star.
Yeah.
You can run for 200 yards and we ain't got a pass no more. But you could go to a Super Bowl with Neil O'Donnell. You could go to a Super Bowl with Stan Humphries. Or a better way to put this, you could lose four Super Bowls with Jim Kelly. Two of them to Jeff Hostetler and Mark Rippon, and the other two to Troy Aikman, whose job was to hand the ball off.
Right. Okay, yeah. Troy was, I mean, he was obviously he's in Hall of Fame. We're not going to admit, but yes, he was not in the mold of the Josh Allens that we think of.
It's now. Obvious that he is in the Hall of Fame. I contend it is not nearly as obvious as advertised that he is a Hall of Famer.
Damn. You just, I mean, boy, them Cowboys fans are going to be on your head.
No, they might. All I'm saying
Jason
is,
Witten,
all
Jason
I'm
Witten,
saying is,
Troy Aikman.
The man threw 20 touchdowns once.
True. Different era of football, but true.
Hold on. Even in that era of football, go show me the Hall of Famer from anywhere around that era with a 20 touchdown season. And you could say that it was about them running the ball with Emmitt and all of that stuff. Okay, that's cool. Show me the guy with a 20 touchdown season.
I can't do that.
There's a reason why Jimmy Johnson didn't have faith in him on the front end and was ready to go to Steve Walsh at every turn. And that's not to say that Aikman's a bad quarterback, but on the face of three rings.
Right. Right. Of course. Of course. Is it fair to say that he lost his job to Jamel Holloway?
Yes, he did. What do you mean? Yeah. He did lose his job to Jamel Holloway.
He lost his job to Jamel Holloway? Yeah.
Yo, Barry Switzer, you want to talk about like interesting moments in the history of race and sports?
Yeah.
Barry Switzer almost was obligated to recruit Troy Aikman. Because, for those of you who don't know, Aikman's from Oklahoma.
Right. Henrietta,
Henrietta, Oklahoma. But I think he was in, I think he may have done high school in California. Like, he's like a dual citizen of sorts. But there ain't no way you're going to have a white quarterback as good as Troy Aikman was at OU and have a local tie, and you're not going to recruit him. And so Switzer went and recruited him. And he did have a run of the option here and there, but they ran the eye. You know, it was supposed to be set up for Aikman to throw the ball. Jerome Brown and them boys broke Troy Aikman's leg in Norman in 1985. Oof. They went to Holloway, who was a freshman, went back to that bone, won a national championship, and were like, dog, what are we doing here?
Right, like, we don't have to do this.
Yes,
right.
So yes, Jamel Holloway took his job.
Right. That's not often you can say that about a Hall of Fame quarterback. I hear what you're saying. The three Super Bowls ring out a lot more than any of us particular statistics.
There's never been, and I feel every time Aikman is salty, I get it totally. Why? Imagine this. You are Troy Aikman, and you go to Oklahoma, and the coach is like, yeah, I don't know. And then you go to the Cowboys. You're the number one overall pick, and the coach who took you number one overall is like, yeah, I don't know.
Steve Walsh. Let's bring in Steve Walsh.
The same year.
Just to be sure. Yeah.
They spent the number one overall pick on Steve Walsh, and we're still trying to find ways. Like, he was ready to bench Aikman, and they had to tell Jimmy, dog, no, we can't do that, homie. Like just so you know, that's not going to wind up happening. And so then after he finally wins over Jimmy, Jimmy leaves, and who do you bring in? The guy who didn't believe in you before.
Barry Switzer. I mean, that must have, Troy hated Barry Switzer, man. And understandably so. I mean, it makes sense.
By the way, as we talked before about the coaches thing and the college coaches coming to the pros and not working, Barry Switzer also believed what he did at Oklahoma could work in the league. Not necessarily the wishbone stuff. It just happened that Switzer operated in the opposite direction, where rather than being a tyrannical taskmaster, he was like, psh, live it up.
These boys will take care of themselves. The game will take care of itself.
Yeah, do what they do. You know? Do what they do. And it worked for like 2-3 years.
Right, right.
And then they needed some actual coaching, and it wasn't going.
Yeah, man. I mean, everybody got old, you know? I mean, they were the tail end of that run. That's. I mean, again, it's shocking that Barry Switzer, my first story as a professional journalist was about Mark Twine overdosing in his car. Like, and that to me, that felt like the end of that Cowboys era. I mean, obviously, that's what a sad pivot. But those teams and the stories behind those teams are just unreal. And Barry Switzer perfectly fit in as a dude, but to be over them, nah, that's probably not where he should have been.
The quote about the White House.
Oh.
By the way, Earl Thomas tried that, and his woman triangulated his location with Snapchat and ran up in there with the Yappa.
Bo. Earl Thomas disappeared from the NFL. He didn't retire. Like, you know what I mean? Like, after that offseason, we never heard from him again. Bro.
Well, no, he went back to Baltimore, right? I mean, he went to Baltimore, and then
is that
they
when
got
he had
tired,
to fight?
And then they got tired of him, and then they put out Hall of Fame football player, presumably still able to play, and nobody wanted to put up with him.
I mean, bro, again, this is what makes me think, to kind of circle back to Baker, something else must be going on. Because with something, when all of a sudden nobody wants you, it just makes me wonder if there's something else going on there that is going to come out later or that we just might never know about, and he'll just fade away from the league. Look, I always say there's a safety that played in the NFL in the middle part of the decade who had a great season and he disappeared. He disappeared. I'll tell you offline because I don't want to put his name out there. But there was no reason that he's not in the NFL. He was really good.
I mean, I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about? Yes. And he disappeared. He disappeared. He never got another chance at the NFL again after his contract ran out. So I don't know what's going on. There's these kind of stories that happen and you kind of forget these guys because the league has, you know, 1,000 players and people are coming and going. But I just wonder if there's something going on with Baker that we will eventually find out in an athletic scoop or something like that, because it just doesn't make a lot of sense that there's not a market for him at all.
At all. At all. At all.
Right.
Somebody's eye, Jameis Winston.
Yeah, bro.
At all.
Right. I mean, they're going to have to staple some draft picks and everything else to make people take the former number one overall pick in the league. So I don't know, man. Maybe Baker would tell us something, or we'll hear about it on Instagram, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Nah, man. But look, that is Joel Anderson. Check him out at Slate. Hang up and listen. He does that. I may or may not be appearing on that in the not too distant future, even though
Come on over, bro. I'm just going to ask you questions. I'm just going to throw things at you.
Yeah, get ready for the disrespect I'm about to bring you, like the disrespect that you bring me.
Don't be that way. I'm proud of you, bro. I'm really happy.
You don't want me to be the way you are? Is that what you're saying?
I'm celebrating you, bro. We talking about HBO doing big things. I see your little corner office there. You know what I'm saying?
This ain't even the office, by the way. This the room off the office. Oh. The office in there.
Oh, excuse me. My bad.
Yeah, your bad indeed. That's
my bad,
right.
Superintendent Jones. My bad.
That's right. But congratulations for real, man. Slow Burn 6 was incredible. For anybody who has not heard it yet, I highly recommend that you go check it out. And check out, was it Slow Burn 4 on Big N Tupac?
Slow Burn 3.
All right. Well, look, y'all go check that out. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 times a week. Gabe Bassane and Adi Khan handle things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time, and thank you for watching on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.